Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight.
I feel very exhilarated by a caucus that we had this morning in terms of the questions that members have. We spent a good deal of time on the substance, but then some on the process as well. And We stand ready to stay as long as it takes to pass the bill. I think members are eager to pass a bill, and again, it won't be long before we'll be making a real difference in the lives of the American people.
That, of course, is Nancy Lugosi, the Speaker of the House, coming out from behind the shadows again to make a fool of herself and embarrass the American people. But it gets even crazier. Play clip three with the laugh track, if you don't mind, on the Savage Nation.
The CBO did come out with a report yesterday on the Senate bill. Mind you, the Senate bill passed Christmas Eve, but there was a CBO score going into the vote, but this addressed as amended. And what was positive about it is it showed over $100 billion in savings for the first 10 years of the bill and $1 trillion over the second 10 years.
She's lying through her ears. She's lying. Every report says it will cost $1 trillion over 10 years. How can you people take this? How can you possibly live in a country with naked, bald lies like this wherever you turn? But that's not the end of it. Now we have a Hollywood idiot named Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, who likes to play war heroes, who hates America, has the nerve to come out and say America is overcoming racism. It's just taking an awfully long time. There's no words that I can speak, and that's saying a lot for me, on the radio, that is, about Tom Hanks. Why do these vermin in Hollywood hate America so much? The same America that has given them so much because they capitalize on our sentiment, for example, about World War II heroes. Look how him and Spielberg nakedly abuse World War II veterans for their personal gain over and over again, and then in the next breath tell us we're a racist nation. This is the most benign nation on earth. This is the most integrated nation on earth. This is the nation that is kinder and gentler to everyone on the planet than any other nation the world has ever seen. And these rats in Hollywood do not have a capacity to love the country. They have no capacity to love this nation. There are many reasons for it, but I'm not going to waste any more time on it, frankly, other than to tell you never, ever go to a Tom Hanks movie. You know, I'm a fan of military history. I'm not going to watch the Pacific series that he's done with Spielberg. I will not watch it. I'm never going to talk about it. I'm talking about it now, but I'm never going to watch it. I'm going to eschew the pleasure of watching Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, two commies, put out yet another movie about World War II. They made a fortune on two of their productions, Band of Brothers on television, and then the other one, Saving Private Ryan. Now, of course, they want to go for number three with something about the Pacific. I'm not watching it. I'm not going to enrich them. These two left-wingers, you know what? Let them take it to Venezuela. Let them take it to somewhere else. I'm not going to watch any more of their rubbish. Tom Hanks? Not me, my friend. You don't fool me. You're a fraud through and through. How this happened to you, I'll never understand. You were very convincing in Saving Private Ryan, Tom, but that's because you're only a marionette. People forget that you're only an actor. What that means is you're only as good as the director and the lighting man and the makeup person make you look. But inside you, there's nothing but a hollow man, Tom. A hollow, hateful man, and I'm not taking it anymore. You have the nerve to say that America is a racist nation compared to what? Compared to which nation is not a racist nation, Tom? What nation are you talking about, Tom? Let's move on. Let us move on. Let's see what else is in the news. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Open mic to Mike Day. Any topic is fair game. Any topic is fair game. As of right now, they don't have the votes to pass the bill. Although Obama said it's happening any day, although Nancy Lugosi said it's happening any day. The fact of the matter is they do not have the votes right now to pass this in the Senate. Nobody believes that. Democrats still lack votes to pass their health care bill. As of Friday, the Democrats were meeting to discuss the still evolving plan and their inability to sell it. Leaders are trying to soothe lawmakers worried about the price they might pay in November's congressional elections for supporting this communist monstrosity. Now, you know, I could give you a whole story on Soviet Russia, but I don't think you want to hear it because most of you are so tired of the health care story that there's no point in talking about the slavery of the Soviet Union. You don't even know what the word Soviet means and how close we actually are to living in the ex-Soviet Union. I'll give you a hint of it. The Soviet, the word Soviet comes from the Russian word Sovet, S-O-V-E-T. And what does Sovet mean? It means advice, or a group of people seeking the best advice for institutions and enterprises. By that definition, we already live in a Soviet America, because we have not a representative body. We don't have representatives. Are you telling me your congressperson or your senator really represents your interests? Well, of course not. They don't. They are the Sovets. They are the advisors. They are not the representatives. In that sense, we have already had the October 1917 revolution in the United States of America. It happened a long time ago. The political power in this country is in the hands of a few hundred people, and even smaller than that number. So as I, again, I say, Soviet means, derives from the Russian word Soviet, meaning advice or a group of people seeking the best advice for institutions and enterprises. In other words, the elite who know better than you do. That's the Soviet. And that's where the word Soviet came from. And that's why we are already living in the United Soviet States of America, USS of A. Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and the others, in essence, are trying to turn this into an absolute Soviet nation. They heard from the people. They know you're against it. They know they're in trouble. They know you're going to throw Democrats out. Everybody knows that. Everybody in the media knows that. Everybody in the government knows that. Everyone is saying it. Even Democrat advisors are saying that. It's no secret that the people don't want this monstrosity because they know it's corrupt. They know it's going to drive up costs, drive down health care. It's going to give health care to illegal aliens. It's going to reward scum lawyers. We all know this. And yet, Nancy Lugosi, like the creature from the Black Lagoon that she apparently is, continues like a Dracula to come up and every day with a frightful, nightmarish look on her face, say we're going to pass it. The people be damned. The people be damned because we live in the Soviet states of America, the United Soviet States of America. After all, if we lived in a democracy or even a republic where there was representative government, our representatives would have said, no, thank you. We don't want it. The people don't want it. Every poll says we don't want it. Who really wants this monstrosity of a health care plan that Obama has put out there? Who really wants this Frankenstein? Let's go down the list of who wants it. Well, I'll tell you who wants it. Illegal aliens want it. Grifters want it. People who are going to profit directly from it want it. But the American people, and I say the American people, I mean the working middle class. The working middle class who are going to pay for it don't want it. The working middle class are going to pay for it. We don't want it. We said no. We're the ones who pay the bills. We don't want this. We know we're going to get it in the ear. We don't want it. So we live in the United Soviet States of America. Again, remember when you say, oh, Soviet Savage, you're exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating because if you know anything about history, you know that I know history. And you also know that I'm citing what the word Soviet comes from. Soviet meaning advice. Or a group of people seeking the best advice for institutions and enterprises. Those are the elites of Russia. Those are the communist leaders who did not listen to the people. In fact, when the people spoke, if they rattled the leaders too much, they were turned into slaves, which, of course, is where we are going. We have one Hollywood fascist after another putting down America, and then when someone stands up and tries to talk to them, they're thrown out of meetings, which happened yesterday at the fascist dictator Sean Penn's press conference. Some flake rabbi with some fake congregation in Washington, D.C., had this creature, Sean Penn, there to talk about his wonderful humanitarian work in Haiti. Now, I want to ask you something. Do you actually think Sean Penn did humanitarian work in Haiti? You know who did the humanitarian work in Haiti? It was the U.S. military. It was NGOs. It was firemen. It was police. First responders from around America went there. Israel went there. And nobody held a press conference to say how wonderful they were in what they did in Haiti except one man, a vile anti-American psycho named Sean Penn. So during this anti-American front group at some fake synagogue in Washington, D.C. with a flake rabbi, a woman comes up from the Washington Examiner and asks this creature from Psycholand, Sean Penn, about his rectal cancer comment, which we'll play the minute I come back in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Do I hope that those people die screaming of rectal cancer? Yeah.
Okay, that's the horrendous monster, Sean Penn, hoping that his critics die screaming of rectal cancer on CBS television. Not one word from the geniuses at CBS about this attack upon freedom of speech. This is the same creature, the same cretin as Sean Penn, who later on this week said that anyone who criticizes the dictator of Venezuela should be put in jail for it. You don't believe me? Okay, I told you liberalism is fascism at its worst, but you don't listen to that. All right, so yesterday, a reporter from the Washington Examiner goes to a Sean Penn kind of fake press conference where he's trying to tell everyone how great a man and humanitarian he is. As I said to you, people who really did the work in Haiti didn't hold press conferences, but he needs to show you what a great guy he is. Listen to what happened at the meeting in 01.
Hi, Mr. Penn. I'm with Washington Examiner, and I have a question. How have you seen your critics change since you mentioned that they should die of rectal cancer?
Excuse me. We're here talking about the Haitian benefit.
It's related to the Haitian benefit.
Excuse me.
I don't think discussion of critics has anything to do with the people there.
I would like to be respectful of the time and the fact that this is a benefit from supportive people.
Okay, but there have been people have, you know,
No, I think that you're investing in a culture that I'm not interested in. And I think
excuse me, ma'am. This is the end of your...
So the vile Sean Penn, the cowardly Sean Penn, the thug Sean Penn, the communist Sean Penn, the anti-American Sean Penn, he's not interested in investing in a culture he's not interested in. So he's not interested in freedom of speech. And you believe this man is worthy of a movie that you go to? Never go to any of his movies. You know, you have the power. I have 10 million listeners. The conservative sphere is probably 30 to 40 million Americans. You never have to go to a Sean Penn movie. You never have to go to a Spielberg movie. You never have to go to a Tom Hanks movie. The only thing these creatures understand is their pocketbook. Because at the end of the day, that's all they live for. They're the men of the Bible who worship the golden idol. And if the Oscar is not a golden idol, I'd like to know what is. If the Oscar itself does not represent everything that the Bible warned you against, I'd like to know what does. But let's not get too religious today. I did an hour of that, you know, recently, and I enjoyed doing it, but that's enough. I'd like to talk with you about a number of things today, and I don't want to blow a stack. Another one, another vessel. I didn't blow one yet. But if you want to be a slave within the vast concentration camp of the new United Soviet States of America, where these lowlifes, these lowlife psychopaths, tell you not to ask them questions? Well, don't include me, because I will fight it with every breath in me. I'm never going to go along with your slavery. Never. And it's interesting to me that the Democrats are the ones who want you in slavery. As bad as the Republicans were, at least they didn't try to check what you said and how you said it. I was cleaning out my bookcase, and I found a little red book called Quotations from Chairman Mao Zedong. I remember buying this. I even found the price for 60 cents back in the 70s in a communist bookstore in San Francisco run by a fake poet who was really a capitalist in disguise, whose last name rhymes with spaghetti. Another faker who's got property all over the country and property in Paris, who puts on a big act. Oh, I'm just a nice, calm Libby, and I want everyone to have everything. And no one knows I really own this property on Broadway in Columbus, that I really have lots of property and money. They think I'm really for the poor. So he sold it in his bookstore, and I picked it up, and I couldn't believe what I found. You hear the word progressive a lot, don't you, today? Do you know that the word progressive refers to communism directly? So the next time you hear the word, I'm a progressive, you are hearing the words from people who are telling you, I'm a communist. I will prove what I just said to you in this quotation from Chairman Mao Zedong on page 23, where he writes, communism is at once a complete system of proletarian ideology and a new social system. It is different from any other ideological and social system, and it is the most complete, progressive, revolutionary, and rational system in human history. Notice the emphasis on the word progressive right next to the words revolutionary, next to the word revolutionary. So progressive is a code word for communism. Now, Mao Zedong was responsible for the deaths of at least 60 million of his fellow Chinese who would not go along with his progressive communism. And that's what's coming in America unless you stand up to these creatures. And there's plenty of them. The media is 89% to 93% progressive communist. The Democrat Party is at least 50 to 60% progressive socialist, if not outright Marxist-Leninist. I'd say 20% of the Democrat Party today is Marxist-Leninist. I would say that the Republican Party is 40% socialist and 15% Marxist-Leninist. I'd say the Republican Party is 10% conservative with 25% adults who don't even know what they are. That's the shape we're in. That's why the people hate politicians. That's why the people have contempt for Sean Penn. That's why the people hate Hollywood. The real people hate Hollywood. The dolts and the idiots and the drug addicts sit in the movie theater. Who else would go to these movies that these anti-American vermin put out? You have the power. Do not support the Marxist-Leninists in this country. Do not support the Marxist-Leninist the degenerates of Hollywood. Don't go to their movies. Don't go to the movie theater. The next time Tom Hanks gets up with another sob story about World War II vets, you ought to tell them, go to hell. Stop abusing the old men. They're the heroes. You're not.
Savage.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong.
Nancy Pelosi and the gang just added several billion dollars to the health care bill in order to bribe additional Democrat congressmen. That is correct. The illegitimi in the Democrat Party have just tacked a major reform of the nation's student loan system onto the health care overhaul bill in order to corral votes in the House, in order to push it forward. As again, I say, they added several billion dollars more to the cost of this monstrosity. This is what's going on in your country. One bribe after another. One bribe after another. The lie about health care costs continue. They won't stop. They keep piling money upon money upon money. And that's why I said to you, we do not live in a representative government. We live in a Soviet-style government. Soviet is the origin of the word Soviet. The Russian word Soviet means advisors, and that means lobbyists. That's what it means. So we're living in a country run by lobbyists and other backroom dealers who could give a damn less what you think. So there it is. Obama says that his government health care bill will control health care costs, but everybody knows it's a lie. Everybody knows it's not about controlling costs. It's about paying off, supporters. Everybody knows that. That's why the people are against it, because we have to pay for it. We, the middle class, have to pay for this. That's why we're against it. I don't give a damn what the grifters think about the health care bill. I could give a damn less what the illegal aliens want in the health care bill. Let them get the hell out of my country. What do I care what they think? They don't belong here in the first place. Every day I got to listen to one insult after another. Illegal aliens, in other words, have a voice in this debate, but we don't. We, the middle class, have no voice, but the illegal aliens have several people who front for them. They may have the name congressman or congresswoman next to them, but as far as I'm concerned, if they're representing illegitimate, illegal voters, then they themselves should be thrown out of Congress. How in the world has this happened? How is it possible? And by the way, while we're fretting over this gigantic pork barrel bill that Pelosi is pushing, the government workers themselves feel no economic pain. Did you know that right now the bums in government have security, wages, and benefits that beat the private sector. Did you know that? Oh, you didn't know that. All of these bureaucrats, these government workers, have remained unscathed, according to data released by the Labor Department. Compensation for state and local government employees continue to easily outdistance the wages and benefits for workers in private business. That's an upside-down economy if you're living in a free market economy. How is it possible that the deadbeats in the bureaucracies earn more than you do? How is it possible that their hourly wage is higher than yours? How is it possible that the benefits are much higher? How is it possible that benefits for state and local workers average much more per hour than private businesses? How is it possible that these deadbeat, useless bureaucrats who are always crying about their job and they can't do this, they're doing very well. Really, really very well. So the average wage of these workers in the government is much higher than that in the private sector, which means that we become a socialist economy. 1-800-449-8255. Government workers feel no economic pain, but you do. And of course, that's because they're called patronage positions. Does anyone know of a government worker who does a job that you actually need done? Whether it be a county, a town, a city, a state, or the federal government? Certainly, I would say that there are some. I would start with the essential in the military. But I would say that you could cull 15% of the military, top brass out of the military, and still do very well. I mean, you could go down the list. Are your town, are your streets paved? Do you have potholes outside your house that the bums in the local county or town won't fill, but they have pensions that would bust the bank? How come the fat cats in every town in America have monster pensions, and yet they will not fill a pothole, but they will fill their children and your children with pot? But they will not fill a pothole with asphalt. Why is that possible? 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WOR Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, yesterday's first 2 hours of radio, we only got the first 2 hours here in New York, was just stunning. I know you do make notes, I'm sure, during the day, but of course you couldn't possibly have written out 2 hours, but I really want to thank you and just bless you.
I didn't take one call for those 2 hours. I've only done that 3 or 4 times in my 16-year career. I got so enthusiastic about those 2 hours, I just didn't take calls.
I really want to,
you're a religious man, and it was all about the Bible, and I can't do that on a regular basis. I just got in the mood because we're into the Easter Passover time of year, and it just struck me as something very, very critical right now in a time we're living in where we have so many potheads and drug addicts speaking for the side of evil, the side of darkness. I thought somebody had to say something from the other side.
You're right, but there were 6 or 7 things that you put in 6 or 7 things, the way you phrased them and the way you put them. I wish I could just get the tape, just things that everybody, I'm sure that you know.
This is what I wish my listeners would do, is write down those phrases that I come up with. Because they're not derived from notes. They're purely off the cuff based upon, let's say, what I'm doing at the time. I don't remember them the next day. I wish that you would write them down and give me a call back if they come. But I hear your heartfelt, and thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. What else is in the news? Let us go together to some of the headlines on michaelsavage.com and see what I put up there today. As I say, I collect them from early in the morning, and Art posts them for me all day, and then we save some just before the show because I don't want to do show prep for people who precede me on the radio. So let's start at the top. UK teachers get training to spot pupils that might become suicide bombers. That's almost oxymoronic. How is it possible that a teacher needs training to spot pupils that might become suicide bombers? I could fill in the blank on you on that one. The case for medical malpractice reform posted from Fox Business, incredibly important article. Not discussed by the illegal Democrat Party, any medical malpractice reform, because they're almost all lawyers. And, of course, not discussed by the illegitimate in the Republican Party, because the leaders are also tort lawyers. They've taken over every aspect of your life. On the right side of Michael Savage, the Nazi experience and radical Islamic fundamentalism are compared. Oh, it's a hell of an article. Comparing the radicals in Islamic fundamentalism with the Nazis. And you don't see the connection because you haven't been taught it by the vermin in the media. But in fact, there are many parallels between radical Islamists and the Nazi experience. Shall I read some of that for you? We are often told that radical ideas about anything, whether it be religion, politics, or philosophies, can be tolerated as long as these ideas remain within the minority of individuals. A U.S.-based psychiatrist, Dr. Emmanuel Tanay, offered some insight into the power of ideas that can emerge from a small minority. And he shows how fence-sitters, or the silent majority, are actually complicit in any atrocities that are committed in the name of radical ideas. You know how you blamed all of Germany for what the Nazis did? Well, let me tell you how that's happening today. Here's Dr. Tanay's note. A man whose family was German aristocracy prior to World War II owned a number of large industries and estates. When asked how many German people were true Nazis, the answer he gave can guide our attitude toward fanaticism. He said, very few people were true Nazis, but many enjoyed the return of German pride, and many more were too busy to care. I was one of those who just thought the Nazis were a bunch of fools, so the majority just sat back and let it all happen. And then before we knew it, they owned us, and we had lost control, and the end of the world had come. My family lost everything. I ended up in a concentration camp, and the Allies destroyed my factories. He writes the following. We are told again and again by so-called experts and so-called talking heads that Islam is the religion of peace, and that the vast majority of Muslims just want to live in peace. He writes, although this unqualified assertion may be true, it is entirely irrelevant. It is meaningless fluff meant to make us feel better and meant to somehow diminish the spectra of fanatics rampaging across the globe in the name of Islam. The fact is that the fanatics rule Islam at this moment in history. It is the fanatics who march. It is the fanatics who wage any one of 50 shooting wars worldwide. It is the fanatics who systematically slaughter Christian or tribal groups throughout Africa and are gradually taking over the entire continent in an Islamic wave. It is the fanatics who bomb, behead, murder, or honor kill. It is the fanatics who take over mosque after mosque. It is the fanatics who zealously spread the stoning and hanging of rape victims and homosexuals. The hard quantifiable fact is that the so-called peaceful majority, the silent majority, is cowed and extraneous to the Muslim story. And then he goes on. Communist Russia was comprised of Russians who just wanted to live in peace. Yet the Russian communists were responsible for the murder of about 20 million people. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. China's huge population was peaceful as well. But Chinese communists managed to kill a staggering 70 million people under Mao Zedong. The average Japanese individual prior to World War II was not a warmongering sadist. Yet Japan murdered and slaughtered its way across Southeast Asia in an orgy of killing that included the systematic murder of 12 million Chinese civilians, most killed by sword, shovel, or bayonet. And who can forget Rwanda, which collapsed into butchery? Could it not be said that the majority of Rwandans were peace-loving? History lessons are often incredibly simple and blunt. Yet for all our powers of reason, we often miss the most basic and uncomplicated of points. And I'll finish up right now from this writer. He writes, peace-loving Muslims have been made irrelevant by their silence. Peace-loving Muslims will become our enemy if they don't speak up, because like my friend from Germany, they will awaken one day and find that the fanatics own them. And the end of the world will have begun. Peace-loving Germans, Japanese, Chinese, Russians, Rwandans, Serbs, Afghanis, Iraqis, Palestinians, Somalis, Nigerians, Algerians, and many others have died because the peaceful majority did not speak up until it was too late. As for us who watch it all unfold, we must pay attention to the only group that counts, the fanatics who threaten our way of life. Lastly, at the risk of offending, anyone who doubts that the issue is serious and just deletes this email without sending it on is contributing to the passiveness that allows the problems to expand. So extend yourself a bit and send this on and on and on. Let us hope that thousands worldwide read this, think about it, and send it on. Emmanuel Tanay, M.D., 2980 Provincial Street, Ann Arbor, Michigan. You can find it on michaelsavage.com. Care to comment on it? On the Nazi experience and radical Islamic fundamentalism? You do know that the military has its head in the sand. You do know that Homeland Security has its head in the sand. You do know that the president has his head in the sand. You do know that the CIA has been hobbled and has its head in the sand. And you do know that the government, meaning the Congress, could care less about what threatens America. All they care about is dividing up the spoils of the tax base. That's one man's opinion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you. Yes,
the communist progressive left is up in arms right now. This just happened minutes ago in Texas. where the Texas Ed Board adopt social studies standards that support everything decent. They're calling it "The Far Right Has Won." Now listen to what they call the far right. It's a textbook that teaches children that the U.S. free enterprise system is better than communism. It's a textbook that teaches that Albert Einstein was superior intellectually to a person who invented a cookie. Didn't even invent the cookie, but just sold cookies. It is a curriculum that is marked by genuine cultural icons, such as Edison. They wanted to take out the leftists, and the Hispanic caucus in Texas wanted to take Edison out of the textbook and put in somebody who, let us say, did nothing but was of the right color. I mean, that's what it comes down to. The diversity people in Texas try to push diversity above creativity. They try to push diversity above content. They try to push diversity above everything else, and they lost. And consequently, the left-wing blogosphere, meaning the newspapers, the old line silent movies, the newspapers are like the silent movies compared to the internet, which are the talkies, which is why they're dying. The silent movies of today, the newspapers, are going crazy saying the right wing is rewriting the textbooks. Now, how can you argue that putting in Albert Einstein as a great man and Edison as a great inventor is not superior to writing about a man who sold cookies and made some money? How is that possible that we could live in such a time? The answer is because the cultural irrelevancy of the radical left is so narrow that even they got thrown out in Texas in the textbooks. Now, what's important is that the board's decisions will set guideposts for teaching history and social studies to some 4.8 million K-12 students during the next 10 years. And the fact is the textbooks in Texas are going to set the standard for the rest of America. They don't like that a devout Christian conservative was involved in this. You understand that? They want to write that Mexico was superior to the Texans who died at the Alamo. They want to rewrite the textbooks. The radical left wanted to rewrite the textbooks saying that the Mexicans were right for trying to take the Alamo. They also wanted to explain that the Palestinians were right in killing Israelis. And that's why they're up in arms. They also didn't want former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir listed in the textbook. Instead, they probably wanted to put in Yasser Arafat, the baby killer. So thank God the Christian conservatives saved the day in Texas. Conservatives also beat back multiple attempts to include, listen to this in a textbook, hip-hop music as an example of a significant cultural movement in the United States of America. They wanted to compare hip-hop, for example, to Beethoven. So as you understand, the barbarians are not at the gates. The barbarians are in Congress. But right now, they have lost. In the wonderful, wonderful Lone Star State of Texas, God bless the Texas State Board of Education for standing up to the illegitimate on the left, the progressive communists. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There's a lot of stories, but I mean, they're so complicated, I don't think you want to hear them on a day like today. And I don't want to read any more of them. I think I've given you enough fodder for you to talk about. Here's Hillary Clinton, the most anti-Israel Secretary of State in history, and how Jews fell for her, I'll never understand. I don't know how Jews who think they're so smart in banking, in law, in medicine, how could Jews be so ignorant, Hillary Clinton, and not understand what she's doing to Israel? And unless I'm mistaken, and liberal Jews hate Israel, it's possible that I have it wrong. It's possible that the liberal Jewish establishment hates Israel. I don't know. But today, Secretary of Hate Hillary Rotten Clinton criticized Netanyahu for his government's announcement this week of new settlements in East Jerusalem. Well, that would be like saying the United States has no right to build housing in South Texas because the illegal aliens have fundamentally overrun South Texas, that the U.S. should just cede the land to Mexico. Well, why should we cede the land to Mexico? It's part of the integrity of the United States of America. Should we cede Los Angeles to Mexico because there are so many people who are there illegally? Should we just say give Los Angeles to Mexico? Be the same thing as saying to Netanyahu, just give the West Bank to the Palestinians. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Chicago, Jordan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. When I was in high school, they never taught us about our American history. They used to teach us about the French Revolution and never talk about the American Revolution. And I that was wrong to not ever teach us about our
history. I understand. We were all brainwashed by the American public school system, which is riddled with communism. You understand that. You know it now as you've gotten older. I mean, they call themselves liberals. But believe me, there's a huge difference between liberals and communists. Unfortunately, the education departments are riddled with radical communists. You know that, and I know that. Thanks for the call. That's what we're talking about. Let's go to New York City, WOR. Jim, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to tell you that I'm a staff sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, and I really appreciate you speaking very honestly and frankly about what's going on in our nation today, especially with our government. You know,
Well, you guys are on the firing line, not me. I just have to do this and have I just do it, you know, here on a radio show, but you guys actually have to go and face down the barrel of a gun by these throwbacks from the 15th century. And if we don't support you, who will? Tom Hanks? Steven Spielberg to see if they can make some more money off your backs? That's why I've donated money to the Marines who are getting in trouble. That is why I'm trying to get some support for Lieutenant Behenna, who is not a Marine, but a U.S. Army Ranger. You know about his story, Jim?
Yes, I do.
I mean, can you believe that that a U.S. Army Ranger is in 15 years in prison for murder in a combat zone, and they won't even let him out on appeal?
No, it's absolutely obscene. It's obscene.
Well, Jim, I'm trying to get 10,000 letters written to the Secretary of the Army to get Lieutenant Behenna out on appeal. Because it's been written that if he who saves a single life, it is though he saved the entire world. I don't know the man, never met the man. I make nothing from this other than knowing he is innocent and an innocent man is rotting in a jail cell. And I cannot understand why the American people permit this to happen. Thank you for calling.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about this and that, this here on the Savage Nation. I guess we're playing Take Five. Who is this, Dave Brubeck? Dave Brubeck. Haven't played this in about ever. I've never played this on the show. I haven't played this ever. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about so many important things, and I think it's time to lighten up a bit, if you don't mind. How about something light like the U.S. Civil War? And the fact that, in my opinion, this country is more divided since Obama took office than at any time since the Civil War. Would anyone like to challenge that Obama has divided America in a more dramatic way? He has divided man against man, family against family, state against state. More so than at any time, this country is more divided right now after a year of Obama and his left-wing minions than the country has been divided since the United States Civil War. Would anyone challenge that? Is there anyone out there who knows enough about history to challenge this intelligently? I mean, there was a four-year civil war in America where hundreds of thousands of people died fighting over many things. Slavery was one of the things. But did you know that in the border states, brothers and cousins, even fathers and sons, often took opposite sides and found themselves in antagonistic armies? Did you know that? I don't know if you know that. Lincoln thought that his side was 100% right. He stood for union. He stood for the white peace of America. He was opposed to slavery. But what you don't know about Lincoln is that slavery was a secondary issue. His primary purpose in the Civil War and in pursuing it and causing this division was economic. I don't think you understand that it was about an economic war and the slavery was an add-on to Lincoln. He himself said that he opposed slavery, but slavery was a secondary issue to Lincoln. This is something that is not taught in the history textbooks. But we don't have to talk about that because that would be considered too difficult for a... How about the great days of the Arabs? How about one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the history of the human species? How about that? Shall we talk about how the Muslims were stopped only by warfare? How they tried to take the world over and almost did so in 25 years? Did you know about that? Did you know anything about that? Or you thought it was always a religion of peace? You heard that the Crusades, the Christian Crusades you heard about. That's because you were brainwashed into hearing about only the Crusades. But what you don't know is that the Christian Crusades were counter-Crusades against Muslim invasions. That you don't know. Well, I can tell you that story. The Byzantine army being smashed at the Battle of the Yarmouk, a tributary of the Jordan River in 634. You want to hear about that? You want to hear about the Muslims overrunning most of the world in only 25 years? How they took over Syria, Damascus, Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, each city falling almost without resistance to the Muslims, and most of the populations of these regions going over to Islam. And then the Muslims turned east. The Persians found a great general in Rustam. They had a great, great army with a force of elephants. And for 3 days they fought the Arabs at Qadisiyah in 637, and at last the army broke and they ran. Then the conquest of Persia followed. You know, you hear that Persia is a Muslim nation, but you don't know they were not always Persians. And the conquest of Persia followed, and the Muslim empire pushed far into western Turkestan and went eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell without resistance to the new Muslim conquerors, who were filled with a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of their one book, the Quran, who then wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library. Yes, the Muslims burnt the Alexandria Library to the ground. Sound familiar? What happened next? The Muslim tide of conquest next poured along the north coast of Africa to the Straits of Gibraltar and into Spain. Spain was invaded by the Muslims in 710. The Pyrenees Mountains were reached in 720. In 732, the Arabs reached almost the center of France, but then something happened. That's right, something happened in France. Here the Muslims were stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers, and the Muslims were thrown back as far as the Pyrenees again. And I could go on and on, but in only 25 years, the relentless Muslim attacks continued, and the Arabs almost conquered the entire world. But it was stopped. It was stopped by warfare only. Unfortunately, you don't understand why Bush went into Iraq. Unfortunately, many of you don't understand anything about what wars we are fighting or why we are fighting them. Unfortunately, you don't understand that there are 50 conflicts on the globe right now, and almost every one of the conflicts consists of Muslims not getting along with their neighbors. That's because the so-called progressives in the news business have a different agenda than you do. And we can talk about that. We could talk about the positive sides of the Muslim invasion if you want, because there are some. We can talk about how the excited Arabic mind, which is a phenomenal mind, the Arab intelligence is well known and incredible, and how the Arab mind, once it conquered, moved across the world even more swiftly and dramatically than had the Greek mind 1,000 years before it. That the whole Western world, or actually almost the whole world west of China, was stimulated by the Arab mind. And that broke up old ideas and developments of new ones that came along after the conquests. And how the active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion actually integrated and pollinated with the Arab mind in Spain. And how it gave a great flowering to ideas and learning. And how in Central Asia, the Arabs met the Buddhists. And how the Arab mind or the Muslim mind met the Buddhist mind. And then there were material achievements of Chinese civilization. And how the Arab learned the manufacture of paper from the Chinese, and that made printed books possible. And finally, the Arab Muslims came into touch with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And very soon, something interesting happened. The intolerance and the self-sufficiency of the early Muslims, which made them believe the Quran was the only book that was necessary, was dropped. And learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. By the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the whole Arabized world. By the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were corresponding with learned men in Cairo. What I'm getting at is, the throwback Islamists that we are facing around the globe right now actually predate the 9th century Arab mind. They are not even at the level of their 9th century ancestors. They're somewhere around the 7th or 8th century of early Islam. And you find this in America amongst the prisoners or criminals who convert to Islam in jail. These are usually ignorant men who have had no education whatsoever. They give them the holy roller language in jail. They give them an outfit and a book, and they tell them this is the only book they need, and they go out and they try to convert others. Eventually in time, as these men become more knowledgeable and more worldly and more educated, they will cease being as fanatic, and the world might benefit from some of their native intelligence. Unfortunately, that is a long time in the future. Right now, we are facing too many people in too many mosques, both in America and the world, who are going out thinking that only the Quran is necessary to survive in the world, and that the self-sufficiency of this one book shall carry them through the ages. As I say, these men are not even at the level of the 9th century Muslims who predated them. This is one man's pocket view of history. My name is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talking about penguins, not. We are not talking about emperor penguins. We are talking about human history and where we sit in the history of the world. Isn't that interesting when you think about it? When you actually think about what my show is about, you know, despite all the joke telling and the sarcasms, and when you actually think about it, what I'm trying to do is put everything in context of where we are in the broad sweep of civilization, where we sit as a nation. How we've gotten to this point where there is no longer representative government in a nation that was founded on overthrowing an autocracy, how we become an autocracy, where the politicians are not responsive to the people at all, where the will of the governed does no longer matter, where we have almost a foreign power running America, where they represent illegal aliens rather than the tax-paying citizens, where every day the newspapers show the plight of non-citizens rather than the plight of citizens. How do we find ourselves in such a place? I try to explain that in my own way. Let's go to the callers in New York, WOR. Donna, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. Yes, regarding the textbook issue, I think they're rewriting the textbook because Obama wants to educate the black people, the society, to catch up to the white people, because the last 200 years, I know when I was in school, I learned about the forefathers, and the only thing I learned about with the black people were that they were slaves. Now, can you imagine how they must have felt?
Well, wait, hold on. No, this had nothing to do with the textbook story in Texas. In Texas, the left-wing progressive socialist communists wanted to take out any mention of Edison and Einstein and replace it with a man who sold cookies. I mean, do you think that that's a relevant thing to teach children of any race?
Well, yes, because
So in other words, a cookie salesman of color is superior to Albert Einstein?
Well, the thing is that I think what's... see, when Obama ran for presidency, he didn't know much...
Ma'am, you're having trouble holding an argument, please, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic. You just said to me that you think a cookie salesman who happened to be a man of color, his story is more important than that of Albert Einstein and Edison. Did you realize what you just said?
I did say that. You know why I said that?
Because you're an ignorant, uneducated woman and you don't even know what you're saying.
Black people living in Russia, there's no black people living in China, and there's no black people living in Japan. We are the only people who have black people that are equal to us. And unfortunately, they've been behind with education from the white people.
So in other words, we should talk about a person of color who sold cookies as opposed to the man who invented the light bulb?
Yes. I mean, these black people...
Donna, do you have any idea what you're saying, how ignorant it sounds?
It?
What Donna, do you mean, did you go to school, Donna? How far did you go?
Universities. I know. I'm now an author.
Donna, how far did you go in university?
Far enough before I got struck with an illness.
Donna, please, be realistic. Civilization did not advance because of a cookie salesman. Civilization advanced because of the great genius of Edison and Einstein, for example. So if you lose the capacity to understand the relative importance of Edison as opposed to a cookie salesman, then you've lost all value of education whatsoever. That's exactly why this battle just occurred in Texas. It was because of ignoramuses like you who were trying to impose a political view of history rather than a reality view of history upon the poor children's minds. Aren't the children brainwashed enough with left-wing rubbish already? They need more of it?
Because we're the only society who leads the way. And Obama is trying to help his own people, trying to catch up.
Well, first of all, Obama had nothing to do with the textbook issue. Donna, he had nothing to do with the textbook. So why are you bringing Obama into it?
Help the black people, to help the kids get their
Now, how do you help a black child if you tell a black child that the man who invented the light bulb and hundreds of other important things for the advancement of all people on earth and the betterment of all people on earth was not as important as a black man who sold cookies? How do you help a child? How do you help him with that viewpoint?
Cookies. I'm talking about a textbook, education.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying to you. You're not listening to a word anyone's saying to you. And I hope that your illness is not that of deafness. The man who they tried to put into the textbook was a man named Famous Amos who invented sold cookies. And they tried to put that as an example of a great man, and they wanted to take Einstein and Edison out of the textbook. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? Gone? Gone, Donna? Sorry about that. I guess the orderly had to come back and get her off the wall phone. Why'd you put her on? I mean, for God's sakes. It's sad. It's sad. People mean well. I think that they want to mean well, but their feelings get the better of their mind, you know. And we can't have feelings running the world. Unfortunately, we have too many people who are using their feelings as opposed to their reason. And that's why we have lost the great advances in mathematics, medical, and physical sciences in the United States of America. We hear that, oh, we're second rate to the third world in some ways, and it's true. Is there any reason? You think there's no reason why the children are not able to advance this society and the world anymore in mathematics, medical, and physical science? The answer is because they've been fed the rubbish that the progressive communist illegitimate left have forced down their throats, such that a cookie salesman is superior to Albert Einstein. And many of you don't even understand what I'm saying. That's even worse. Okay, we'll move on. We'll move on. Well, that's how they can get away with the lie that global warming is caused by man in the middle of blizzards that are facing the entire West. One Western nation after another in Europe is inundated with snow and blizzards this late in the year, and yet the morons are still believing there's a thing called global warming and the polar bears are dying, even though the polar bear population has actually increased since 1950. That's because there's no reason left in the minds of so many people. They're ignoramuses. Uneducated, taught by less educated people who want to push a feeling agenda so that they can manipulate the people. What you're lucky is to have a man like me. I'm a national treasure. I am a national treasure in the world of AM radio. There never has been anyone like me, and there never will be anyone like me in day-to-day talk radio, never. And I'm going to say it to you till you finally understand that you should listen to me. If I'm wrong, prove me wrong. But you better listen to me because I'm the best teacher you're ever going to get in the American media. The best. Now, you've got a lot of things you could be doing instead of listening to me on your local station. When I started in radio in 94, oh, yeah, you had 70 stations in most major markets. But there was no internet in 1994, virtually no internet. You know that? Right now, you can go anywhere you want, and you can get any kind of entertainment you want or whatever, any kind of distraction you want. And yet you're still listening to me in great numbers. The show is the third largest radio show in America. Why? I must be offering you something. Even if it is ideas that you use to sharpen your own and bump up against me in your own thinking, that's fine. But don't dismiss my ideas, or if you do, do so at your own peril.
Savage.
So here we are. Here we are. Yesterday I quoted a book written by some ancient olive grower but was probably deficient in vitamin B3, according to the progressive communist liberals, by a man named Isaiah, who wrote, "As for my people, a babe is their master and women rule over them," and I was referring to Obama and Nancy Pelosi. And I said to you, was Isaiah just a vitamin B3 deficient olive grower, as the left would have you believe, or was he in fact a prophet who spoke directly, who God spoke directly through when he wrote, "As for my people, a babe is their master and women rule over them"? I mean, you can find anything you want in the Bible, really. Many of you are liberals and you're good people and you want peace on earth, as we all do. But there are people on earth who are not good and do not want peace. They want you on your knees and they want you to be converted into their religion. We all want what was said in Isaiah, where he said, "And he shall judge between the nations and shall decide for many peoples, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares." That's a very important writing in Isaiah. "And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Those are beautiful, important words. Go tell that to the 500 or more Christian men, women, and children, including pregnant women, who were butchered last week by Muslim mobs who went fanatic with machetes and cut them to ribbons and burnt their churches to the ground, and you look the other way because the vermin in the media didn't even report it. Go tell it to them. Go tell it to their grieving relatives that we shall beat our swords into plowshares. Go tell them to that. Go tell the Muslim fanatics that nation shall not lift up sword against nation. Go tell Al-Qaeda not to lift up sword against nation. Go tell them to beat their swords into plowshares. Don't tell me to tell Obama to turn our nuclear weapons into silos. No, my friends, we don't need pacifism right now. We need militarism. We need more militarism, not less of it. We don't need any more pacifism in the military. We need to teach our men to go out and to conquer the enemy, not to understand the enemy. And how many of our men in the military academies are taught to defeat the enemy anymore? Instead, they're taught to understand the enemy? Is the enemy taught to understand our men and our way of life? Of course not. They're teaching them to kill them. So we have had a revolution in this country by the socialists. All you've got to do is read quotations from Chairman Mao Tse-tung in his little red book, which I have in my hand. I told you, I found it in my library this morning. I was shocked to read about Marxist-Leninism. I happen to be working on a new book. It'll be out, well, I'm not going to tell you when. It'll be the most important book I've ever written in my life. It says everything I've been trying to say to you over 15 years, and I've done so in part, but never in its entirety. But in it, I actually discuss the Marxist-Leninist takeover of the world and how you have been hoodwinked by the so-called liberals slash socialists who are really Marxist-Leninists. And I will prove it. That's only a part of the book, by the way. But if you read Mao's little red book and you pick up the chapter on how the military is supposed to be led, and you go to page 165 of the Little Red Book, Serving the People, Education and the Training of Troops, you're shocked by what you read. You're shocked by what Mao Tse-tung, the butcher of China, was inculcating in the people of China in that time, in the army and in the people, where the children were taught one thing and how the soldiers were taught another. And he said how the children must be taught definitively. The basic principles of Marxism-Leninism should be the guide for everything. And then he goes into the soldiers. All officers and fighters of our army must improve their military art, march forward courageously towards certain victory in the war, and resolutely, thoroughly, wholly, and completely wipe out all enemies. I will wager a bet that such statement is not taught in West Point, in Annapolis, or the Air Force Academy. I can guarantee you that our men are not told to resolutely, thoroughly, wholly, and completely wipe out all enemies. I can guarantee you instead they're getting diversity training from radical Muslims who are coming in there and telling them that America is a racist, sexist nation. And the sheeple who run these academies should be ashamed of themselves. We need a revolution at the highest levels of our military academies if we are to survive this century, let alone this decade. Are we teaching our men to march forward towards certain victory in the war and resolutely, thoroughly, wholly, and completely wipe out all enemies? They're not even teaching the men who the enemy is. They're making the men doubt themselves and think that they're their own enemy. The police the same. The police are being hobbled by this garbage, this so-called liberalism. which is a front for Marxism-Leninism. We have had a revolution in America. It's only a matter of how far it goes. It didn't start under Obama. Don't be naive. He's just the last in a long line of such revolutionaries. You could argue that it started with the Social Security number under FDR. You could argue that it started under FDR. He was a clear socialist. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of Obama's mentors, modeled his centralized governmental policies upon the Soviet Union and what was going on in other nations at that time, the 1930s. He was, in essence, borrowing from dictatorships. And he was stopped, as I taught you last week, by four kosher butchers in the Schechter case. But let's put that aside. That's a little esoteric for today. What's important for you to know right now is that Obama did not start this march towards communism in the United States of America, but he just might end it. Some would say it started with the Social Security number. Then along came the Social Security Administration. I can name one administration after another that is clearly a socialist department. So the country was, before Clinton arrived, before LBJ rather, maybe 40% socialist. Lyndon Baines Johnson's Great Society moved us towards a 60% concentration of socialism in the United States of America. Then came Clinton, 8 years. Then came Bush, 8 years. And now we have one year of Obama. 17 years of Clinton, Bush, and Obama, we are about 70% socialist already. So I love when people say Obama's a socialist. What else is new? Well, that's such a shocker. That's not the new part about Obama. He is not merely a benign European socialist, as the naive Bill O'Reilly would have you believe. I saw him with that despicable sauerkraut last week. The two wise men of Fox News. One tells the other. Corned beef tells sauerkraut the following. Corned beef says, oh, so he just wants to move us into a European-style socialism where there are higher taxes. And sauerkraut says yes to corned beef. So cabbage tells sauerkraut one thing and sauerkraut tells corned beef the other. And you're supposed to believe that Obama's merely a benign European-style socialist. Well, I beg to differ with you. And I can prove it. And I will prove it. I will prove it when my book comes out. It will be the manifesto that you've been waiting for all your life. It's one of the reasons I'll stop right there. It'll be out eventually. It'll be out sooner rather than later. Big, 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 big book that proves everything I've been saying on this show to be true. Proves it not with my words, but with their own words and who they associated with. It's the definitive book on the subject. Many have written around the subject, but many people don't even understand what they're talking about. I do. So let's go back to positive stuff. You don't want to hear this. You know, many of you are out on the road now. You're going to dances. In New York. What, are you kidding me? Dances at this time of night? Many of you are just getting up. You just came home from a dance in New York City. Many of you are living with your parents. You got the hairnet on, you know, you're smoking your first joint. You're going to go out around 3 in the morning to be Mr. Cool, a job you don't have. You sneer at your parents, your hardworking parents, but you're living at home. You have no self-respect because your father won't even tell you you're a bum. That's because of 50 years of communist education in America to weaken you and turn you into less than a human being, less than a man. So we don't even have self-respect in our youth today. Therefore, remove vexation from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Remember that one about all is vanity? Huh? The words of the wise are as goads and as nails well fastened to those. So you don't even like my words. The words of the wise are as goads. I goad you with my words. They feel like nails up against wood. That's why I'm hated by you liberals, because you know I'm right. Sure, it's easy to live in a world filled with pap and lies. Liberal platitudes every day where you feel good from the garbage you feed each other. Garbage you feed each other to the point where you don't even know what's real around you. And every time you get nervous, you take another joint or this or that, whatever you're on. Well, I know how to enjoy myself, too. After all, I'm a man of the earth. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy the pleasure of his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. You don't know that the Old Testament tells you to enjoy the flesh and enjoy your life. You think all of us are prudes and we don't know how to have sex, we don't know how to have enjoyment, and that we're not sensual people. You don't understand anything if you think that. I once met a holy man who said to me, Michael, he said, do you think I'm made of steel? He said, I have the same feelings that the people who indulge themselves have. I'm racked with the same feelings, only I don't indulge them. That's the difference between me and them. He feels them. The holy man feels them. And he tries his best not to engage in them. He represses them. But the radical vermin left have told you that all suppression of emotion, including the sexual and most importantly the sexual, is to be forbidden, verboten. If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? The sexual revolution of the 60s destroyed the fabric of America. It tore the guts out of America. It mocked Christianity. It mocked God. It mocked the church. It mocked the family. It mocked everything decent. And it said to you, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? And take a look at the degeneracy in America today, the moral decay. Nobody would argue with those words. Nobody, even the liberals would laugh at it and say, yay, we love moral decay. Then they get a show on HBO with the other stoners who run HBO. See, that's how it works. There is nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that is from the hand of God. But I would like to do something else right now. What you don't understand is that religion is not all about peace and love. Religion is not all about silence and peace and embracing and dancing and crying and weeping and mourning. Religion is also about the opposite sometimes. So I will play for you now, Turn, 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 and we will advise you to read tonight from Ecclesiastes 3. Play it, please.
A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to read. To everything, turn, turn.
Listen.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace.
A time of war and a time of peace. A time to love and a time to hate. Don't let those liberal psychos tell you you have to love everybody and love everything, because everybody out there doesn't love you. The world is littered with fools like you who think that the world is filled with love and peace. You'll be eaten alive if you live on that garbage. We all must remember something, and then I'm going to stop and get off this, but I told you we're in the time of Easter and Passover. These are very powerful, spiritual times right now, and the nation has not been as divided as it is now under Obama than it has been since the Civil War, in my estimation. You let that percolate through America. This man Obama has divided this country greater than anyone since the Civil War has done. He's ripped the country in pieces in only 1 year. The imposter has torn the nation apart, turning family against family, brother against sister, father against son, state against nation against state, one nation against another. He is the most divisive man in the history of the American people. And you buy that garbage that he's a love peace man? You fool you? Just remember, all is vanity. All is vanity. Just remember that. Just remember that all is vanity. And if you think that Obama is not part of this vanity, my friends, you are mistaken. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I realize on a late Friday, you know, across America, it's when I read from the Bible, doesn't it feel as though it's disjointed from what you hear in the media? Like, what the heck am I listening to? I thought this guy was, you know, funny and about politics. What is he doing? It's almost like hearing pornography. It's that shocking, isn't it? What I read from the Bible is not as shocking as pornography once was, but to show you how far down this culture has gone, pornography is now considered mainstream. The pornography that comes out of Sean Penn's mouth, the pornography that comes out of Steven Spielberg's camera, the pornography that comes out of any one of the Hollywood actors or actresses is considered the norm. The pornography that's shown on television every day is considered the norm. But if you read from the Bible once in a while, and I don't do it that often, and I do apologize for it if it offends you, but it's from the heart, it's that time of year, and I just think about it. If the Bible is so antiquated and so meaningless, then let me ask you something. Let's go back to some of the great authors of my time. Ernest Hemingway, probably considered no good anymore because he didn't write about whatever. One of the greats, simple, direct, former journalist, wrote with spare language, as few words as possible. One of the great writers, grew up on him, and created a great, great image for young men to follow. Made you want to be a man. You couldn't wait to be a man when you read Hemingway. You couldn't wait to be a man when you read Hemingway. You wanted to be like him. You weren't confused about what it is to be a man. So he wrote a book called The Sun Also Rises. You say, wow, what a great title. You don't know what it means, but you heard the title, probably. The Sun Also Rises. It came from the Bible. Came from Ecclesiastes. Some of the great titles of all time all came from the Bible. Look at Steinbeck's titles, biblical. Why is it that some of the greatest novelists of our time all drew their inspiration from the Bible, if the Bible is so meaningless? So you look at Ecclesiastes, the sun also ariseth and the sun goeth down. You know, the wind goeth toward the south and it turn about unto the north. It turneth about continually in its circuit. And the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place where the rivers go, thither they go again. All things toil to weariness. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Listen to what he is saying. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing, meaning man has always been dissatisfied, unfulfilled. And yet, listen to me. Your shrink, your lying shrink, tells you that because you're not satisfied, there's something wrong with you. You need his therapy or you need his pill. No, you're a human being. That's called the anguish of living, schmuck. Living means anguish, and living with anguish, not healing and grieving, healing and closure. Balloons and teddy bears when someone dies. What a stupid nation. Someone dies and they put teddy bears and balloons in the street? Wow, that's amazing. That which hath been is that which shall be, and that which hath been is that which shall be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. You've heard that, haven't you? There is nothing new under the sun. Did you know it came from the Bible? That old Bible, that which hath been is that which shall be, and that which hath been done is that which shall be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. You hear that? Is there a thing where it said, see, this is new? It hath already been in the ages which were before us. There is no remembrance of them of former times, neither shall there be any remembrance of them of latter times that are to come among those that shall come after. So what is Ecclesiastes telling you? It's telling you a lot of things. Telling you a lot of things, and I can't summarize them in one punchline at the end of a long, long week right now. But I think you've drawn your own conclusions today, and I hope that the time you've spent with me thus far in the Savage Nation has been worth your time. I realize you're very busy. I've quoted from Mao Tse-tung to show you how far along we have come in Marxist-Leninism under Obama. I have taught you that, in my opinion, Obama has divided this nation more so than at any time since the United States Civil War. That Obama, the great uniter, has divided America, family against family, brother against sister, father against son, mother against daughter. The man has divided America more so than it has been since the Civil War. Thank you, progressives.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Because you held me tight.
MichaelSavage.com, because you have to look at some of the stories. The Muslim New Jersey terror suspect worked at nuclear power plants. Sharif Mobley reportedly has ties to the same branch of Al-Qaeda who are suspected of attempting to blow up a U.S. airline on its way to Detroit on Christmas. Another American convert to Islam. Another one goes rogue. And America puts its head in the sand and says Islam is not the problem. In fact, right underneath it, there's another argument by the government. The government failed us for the Christmas tree bomber, and they're blaming the internet, not Islam, for the attacks. On Michael Savage, there's a great story you have to look at. Senators question the $1 million salary for Boys and Girls Club CEO. That's right. The CEO of the Boys and Girls Club, a woman, made $1 million in 2008, and an official spent $4.3 million on travel expenses. That's right. That's all the while doors were closing around America for Boys and Girls Clubs. Under God in pledge, ruled constitutional. Rat Boy's former lawyer now works in the Justice Department repping terrorists. Woman gets 16 years for raping daughter from China. Oh, yeah. Couple in Washington State adopted a little girl shortly after her birth in China. The husband was arrested for raping her. Now the fat pig of a wife is going away for raping the same child. You can't even comment on this one.
Sickening.
Police release photos a serial killer took of girls. I can't even look at these pictures. I looked at them and almost started to... I don't know. I had a crazed reaction. I looked at all these lives, and I didn't know how they got lost like this, and I wouldn't recommend you look at them, okay? I don't know whether it's a positive story or a negative story, but a 91-year-old great-grandmother, 91 years old, a pharmacy clerk, fought with a robber and then insisted on finishing her work shift. He tried to rob her. She fought him off. He ran out. And she refused medical care, saying she doesn't want to go home and sit and stare at the walls. 91-year-old Italian woman. God bless her. She should run America. I'd like to see her running Homeland Security. I don't think we'd have a problem with radical Islam. Do you, Beowulf?
I don't think so. You see, that's the work ethic of a completely different generation than the one
have now. Oh, yeah. She said she doesn't want to sit home and do nothing. Here's another wonderful story from the Associated Press. Lesbian teen sues to force school to hold a prom. A lesbian teen who wanted to take her girlfriend to her senior prom wearing a tuxedo is making a school reinstate the dance it canceled. Teacher mauled to death by wolf while jogging. Another U.S.-born Muslim goes rogue and kills. Senator Majority Whip Durbin implies that Obama is not telling the truth. Gangs chase long-term residents out of Philadelphia. Hitler of Iran says Jews will be annihilated. U.S. silent. Savage suggests use religious freedoms to challenge Obamacare. No one picked up on that in the media. U.S. police departments want more Spanish-speaking cops. I think they should go down right to MS-13 and hire them. Just give them a gun and a club and a badge.
They should have a job fair down there or something like that.
I think they should have a job fair in the streets of Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Because if they can hire gang members to interact with the gangs, there'll be less crime.
That's right.
At least it won't result in violence. It wouldn't be that crime goes down.
Well, they'll be more sensitive to the needs of the gang members that way.
Well, they know immediately what kind of needs the gang have. What kind of needs the gangs have.
Right. Right? On the ground training, exactly.
And CNN would certainly approve of it, wouldn't they?
Oh, Rick Sanchez would be right there.
That's right, because he's sensitive to the needs of such people. Of gangs that have special needs.
Such a nice
sensitive to their needs. let's go down Beowulf, too. It's crazy. I'm sleeping most of it. I can't believe this. On MichaelSavage.com, 5 reasons why America should steer clear of a national ID. A new station in L.A. in Orange County is going to include Michael Savage at long last.
Great.
There's an interesting health article, The Great Prostate Mistake. where a doctor argues that testing for PSA, the prostate-specific antigen, is a waste of time. It's worth reading. It's an interesting article. Then we have electron photomicrographs of various insects, including the humble moth. You wouldn't believe a moth that you swipe away and want to throw out of a house. You can't believe the brilliant beauty of a humble moth. All on michaelsavage.com. Where's the letter from Vicky Behenna's mother? Oh, top right. How did I miss that? See declassified information to be presented at the court-martial of Lieutenant Michael Behenna. Didn't make it to any other website in America. Can you believe that, Beowulf?
It's disgusting that nobody else but you is covering this story.
No, of course. Well, no, because there's no money to be made for it. They can't wrap themselves in the flag with that one. Did you ever get caught up in a government bureaucracy? Did you ever talk to a bureaucrat? You're going to waste your time and money. You want to bang your head through a glass wall. Going to the post office is like that. That's why I recommend that you go to one of my great advertisers, Stamps.com. Avoid the post office. Avoid the frustration. Avoid the bureaucrats. Use Stamps.com. So stop what you're doing right now. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. What else is there to talk about? Just about everything.
And now, the Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
Remember this week, Sean Penn wished death on his enemies that they should get a painful rectal cancer.
Does it make you angry when people talk about, you know, Sean Penn, the Hollywood star, the movie star, coming in trying to do something and they're kind of cynical about it?
No, it's just in this, I guess I've been so away from it all in our tent camp in Haiti that I haven't had an awful lot of time to pay attention to them. Do I hope that those people die screaming of rectal cancer? Yeah. You know, but I'm not going to spend a lot of energy on it.
Well, now he's back, refusing to answer questions about it.
Hi, Mr. Penn. I'm with Washington Examiner. And I have a question. How have you seen your critics change since you mentioned that they should die of rectal cancer?
Excuse me. We're here talking about the Haitian benefit.
It's related to the Haitian benefit.
Excuse me.
I don't think discussion of critics has anything to do with the people there.
I would like to be respectful of the client and the fact that this is a benefit from supportive aid.
Okay, but there have been credit. People have, you know, have.
No,
I think that you're investing in a culture that I'm not interested in. And I
excuse me, ma'am. This is the end of your interview.
Okay.
And here's another Hollywood lefty, Tom Hanks, trying to reduce the morale of the troops.
Ordinary Americans hate going to war, which is a paradox, since it was ordinary Americans who made the difference between liberty and subservience, between freedom and terror, 70 years ago.
And don't forget Spielberg taking credit for winning World War II.
Passing generation, more and more people were forgetting about World War II and all the milestones of the 20th century. And that's why movies and that's why television, the very same technology that celebrates the now generation, is also a window of opportunity into the remarkable life and times of the generation responsible for the freedoms that we share today but often take for granted.
And here's an exhilarated Nancy Pelosi.
I feel very exhilarated by a caucus that we had this morning in terms of the questions that members have. We spent a good deal of time on the substance, but then some on the process as well. And we stand ready to stay as long as it takes to pass the bill. I think members are eager to pass a bill, and again, it won't be long before we'll be making a real difference in the lives of the American people. I'm delighted that the president will be here for the passage of the bill. It's going to be historic, and it would not be possible without his tremendous, tremendous leadership, his persistence, his concern for the American people, always guided by his statement that we will measure our success by the progress being made by America's working families. This legislation not only makes history, but it will make progress for America's working families.
I'll be right back. Savage. Recently, we discussed how in Texas there's an attempt to remove historical facts and important people such as Albert Einstein from textbooks and replace them with more politically caponized names and stories such as the man who created cookies. Now, of course, the man who created cookies is a man of color, and therefore his color trumps Einstein's genius, according to the left-wing Marxists. Joining us now is the chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow, to talk about the story. Jay Sekulow, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me.
What are they trying to do?
The Texas State Board of Education is the most influential state board of education in the country. They're one of the largest purchasers of textbooks, and it impacts all 50 states because these publishers will base their textbook curriculum and what's in the textbooks, the actual text, on the decisions coming out of Texas in large part. So what you've got is a huge cultural battle brewing in Texas, and it impacts everything from removing references to Independence Day, saying that Daniel Boone shouldn't be discussed. Let's not discuss Neil Armstrong, Christopher Columbus, inappropriate to discuss. Remove Christmas, but put other holidays that, frankly, most people have never even heard about before. And the idea there, of course, being that they want to change and rewrite American legal history and America's constitutional history. This is a complete rewrite of America's history.
Well, you and I both know what the driving force is behind this movement. It's Marxist-Leninism.
It's an agenda under the guise of political correctness, like a liberal elite agenda, where basically they're trying to remove any reference to America's exceptionalism. Why are we unique as a country? Is it because we believe we're endowed by our Creator with various rights that it's the role of government to protect, but they don't bestow them? These are inalienable as to who we are. It's a foundational principle, and it's not simply a religious dispute here. This isn't just about, you know, should the phrase Christmas be in the textbook or not. It's really about America's history. What's the justification to reminding Americans about the importance of Neil Armstrong stepping on the moon? What's the importance of that? That's part of America's uniqueness. We did it first. Why do we want to remove, or why do they want to remove, Christopher Columbus? Too controversial. Then you've got, besides the incorrect statements in these proposed curriculum changes, how about this one? The Cold War was ended because of Mikhail Gorbachev. No mention of Ronald Reagan. This is the kind of rewriting of America's history that these groups have tried. Now, I will say this, they're also being very unsuccessful. The fact is that conservatives are dominating the debate right now, and that has made a big difference on what the final outcome will be.
Do you think the conservatives are going to win this battle?
Now, Michael, in large part, it's because of things that you've been saying and others. I mean, you've been very vocal about these issues and a host of others. You're pointing out the acerb nature of some of these statements that have come down from this Board of Education or other boards of education here in Texas. Again, because of the conservative control on this, I am very confident we'll be successful. But it does point to the absurd nature of what is going on some of these school curriculums. And I tell parents that at the end of the day, it's the local school boards that matter as well, and you've got to be engaged and know what's going on in your kid's classroom. And part of that process is also a really accurate understanding of America's heritage, where we came from, what makes us unique, I'm not afraid to say it, our exceptionalism as Americans. And what you've got is the liberal elite trying to numb that down as if it does not exist. That's the real agenda here. It's not, and by the way, not hidden. They're very upfront about it.
The libs are pushing for the removal of Einstein and Edison to put in a cookie manufacturer and to blame conservatives and Christians for wanting to keep the facts in the textbooks?
Well, that's right. I mean, the fact is, if you look at the aspects like, you know, why are we not going to mention Christmas? Well, that's because it's the dominant religion. So we need to discuss other religions that may or may not even be known by the American people. There's nothing wrong with having comparative religion courses. I think that's fine. But to then remove such a significant event from a holiday discussion from the textbooks in America is absurd. It makes no sense. But it makes perfect sense if you have this desire to secularize the entire culture and to remove the fact that we are unique as America. We are unique in the way our government is set up. And that distinguishing feature, the fact that our rights are inalienable and God-given, is what makes us unique. You remove that history, you remove the foundation of our culture.
You don't seem to mind that cases such as this put your organization into the media spotlight.
You know, at the American Center for Law and Justice, one of the things you have to do, because we've got lawyers all over the United States and around the globe, you have to engage these issues on a national but also on a regional and local level. So we've been obviously discussing this extensively. We've been bringing this to the attention of media. And frankly, it is the media's impact, and I will say the conservative media impact, and yours is one of the ones leading the way here, that's making such a difference. When you get the message out and the American people hear what's going on in Texas, then you have the whole world focusing in on it. That becomes a very positive agent for change, and we're seeing that develop literally right now as we speak.
Well, where does it go from here?
I think we're going to see a victory in Texas. If we keep the pressure up the next 24 hours, frankly, there'll be next big challenge on this will be in May. I think we're going to clear this challenge. The final vote then comes in May. If we keep the pressure up, we're going to see a victory, and I think we'll have beaten back a real attempt to change the nation's view and understanding of America's uniqueness. And I'm optimistic that we're going to get that. We're going to see a victory. We're going to have to stay vigilant.
How can we get involved in this fight?
We've got a, if you call ACLJ.org, go to our website, there's information there, there's postings. Right now, contacting the Texas Board of Education doesn't hurt, but frankly, it's going in the right direction. I think the next real challenge on this is going to be, again, in May. That'll be the next big one. But if people go to ACLJ.org, there's information available.
Jay Sekulow, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
In a recent news story on MichaelSavage.com, it was reported that Washington, D.C. is looking into what seems like a phenomenal amount of money in pay benefits for nonprofit groups such as the Boys and Girls Club of America, where the CEO made $1 million in 2008. Joining us now is Ken Berger, the president and CEO of Charity Navigator, which is an independent charity evaluator. Ken Berger, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show today.
Ken, tell us what happened here.
Well, it came out that the CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of America has a compensation package of nearly $1 million. And because Charity Navigator is the largest evaluator of nonprofits in the United States, we were asked what we thought about that package. And basically what we said was that it's really out of whack. It's very much on the high side. And the quote in the AP story from me basically said, if people want to become millionaires, then they should go and work in the for-profit sector. That, you know, so that was what was quoted. I mean, there's more to it than that. We do an annual compensation study every year, and our research shows that the largest charities in the United States have an average compensation of $462,000. So when you get to $1 million, we begin to have a nosebleed, as do the 3 million people that use our website each year. And that's the other thing that was mentioned in the AP story, which is the fact that the most common feedback we get from our users, bar none, is the following. I've given to this charity for years. I can't believe how much the CEO is making. I will never give to this charity again. The public is offended that these charities that are supposed to be providing a public good, these charities that are taxed, that have no taxes that they have to pay, are having leadership that is basically becoming millionaires. And that's really what the story is about.
Well, how do we know where the money we donate is going?
Well, every charity that's $1 million or more in size, every year has to complete a report with the IRS. And in that report, they have to indicate how the monies are spent in some broad term. And actually, that document that they submit to the IRS is the document that Charity Navigator uses to do its analysis of the charities that we evaluate. You know, it is not a perfect system. If somebody wants to create a falsehood, if somebody wants to lie to the federal government, that is a problem. But we find that as over the years, as more and more scrutiny has been given to these reports by organizations like Charity Navigator, typically the information is pretty accurate. And so you can see that it includes the salaries of these CEOs. So it's becoming more transparent, more accountability as a result of these reports that they have to submit.
How much do the CEOs of these large charity groups make on average?
Let's put the definition of large in context. Let me just give you a couple of background statistics. Number one, currently there are 1.2 million charitable nonprofits. That means that a person can get a tax donation. There are 1.2 million. Of those 1.2 million, 94% have an annual budget of $1 million or less. So large depends on how you define large. Are we talking about a million or more? But that's only 6% of the charities. That's about 70,000 organizations that are over a million in size. If we're talking about the top tier, over 100 million, it's 0.2% of all the charities in the United States get over 100 million in revenue. So in that class, that 0.2%, of which Boys and Girls Club of America is one, the average CEO pay is $462,000. That's what the average pay is for that top tier, of which there are about 2,500 organizations of this size in the United States, which, by the way, has the largest nonprofit sector in the history of the world. One out of every 10 jobs in this country is in the nonprofit sector.
How much negative feedback on these salaries do you receive?
It's phenomenal. It outweighs any other feedback we get on any other issue. It is, without a doubt, the thing that bothers the public, donors in the public, more than anything else, bar none. We get hundreds and hundreds of these kinds of comments. We allow people who use our website to make comments on any charity that they look at, and it's just one after the other for some of, especially for some of these larger charities. Just to take a step back, though, and give you the other side of the story, the average pay for that 6%, those charities that are a million or more, the average pay in this country is roughly $160,000. And even that is hard for many donors to absorb and understand. I will say this. Running some of these large nonprofits, these multi-million dollar operations, is a very complex thing to do. I did it for 30 years before I came to Charity Navigator. You have to have similar skill sets to the for-profit sector when it comes to managing budgets, public relations, running programs. There's a host of duties. And the reality is that I do believe that people should make a comfortable salary, and it should be a competitive wage. If you're in the New York City area where there are more charities per square inch than anywhere else in the world, and if you want to be able to compete, you've got to give a decent salary. It's just that when it goes off the bar into the million-dollar range, that's when we have a problem. But the notion, is it a bad thing for the CEOs of large nonprofits to make a six-figure salary, or at least in the low six figures? We don't think that's a problem. It's these outliers, these extreme outliers like this, that give the whole sector a bad name. And what it does is it damages the public trust. And that's the most precious thing that any charity can have. The public assumes that you're truly mission-driven and you're trying to help with these really daunting problems that, you know, many people face. And if you're at the same time, you know, that same organization where it's $4 million for travel costs and $1 million of salary and deferred compensation and all of this, it hurts all of us, not just the Boys and Girls Clubs of America.
Where can we learn more information like this? I mean, from who?
Charity Navigator is a website, and we rate charities from 0 to 4 stars based upon their financial performance. Our website is www.charitynavigator.org, and we currently evaluate 5,500 of these larger charities. If you're interested in a charity that we do not yet evaluate, you will be directed to a page where we will guide you through how to read the financial statements, and then there's a link to a site where you can pull up the financials on any charity that fills them out. And again, to fill them out, they have to be $1 million or more in size, according to the IRS. If they're smaller than that, they're not required to do this. But so that covers pretty much the universe of all of the charities that are in this sphere. And by the way, that 6% of charities gets roughly 94% of all the money that comes into the nonprofit sector goes to that 70,000 some odd charities. So the lion's share of public donations go to this small group of charities. And by the way, In the United States, the nonprofit sector is over a $1 trillion part of our economy.
What?
It's over 8% of gross domestic product. It is absolutely enormous.
Hmm.
And I think it's often underreported. I don't think people realize just how large and complex it is and how much of a part of the economy it is. And even in this debate about health care, a big part of this nonprofit sector are nonprofit hospitals, which, by the way, also on average have salaries in the $1 million range. Charity Navigator is actually in the process of trying to dig even deeper, because we think that for a person to make a wise decision about making a charitable gift, they need to look at three things. One, we've talked about, which is the financial health of the organization. A second thing that they need to look at are the ethics and the accountability of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a compensation committee that independently determines the salary? Do they have a conflict of interest policy, a whistleblower policy, a host of other things? So that's the second thing that people need to look at, and we're about to expand our rating system to include that dimension. And then the third, and I would argue the most important thing of all, what are the results of this organization?
Absolutely.
Okay, you pay a higher than average salary. Can you show us evidence that the results of your organization are so significantly above and beyond the average nonprofit that you might be able to justify at least some of this? And so the results of the work of nonprofits is a critical thing to look at. We're going to be evaluating that. Don't we urge donors to call the charity and ask them to provide you with some statistics, some evidence? A lot of charities base their pitch to the public on telling a sob story, something that touches your heartstrings. But then when you pierce the veil and you want to look beyond that, show me the data that shows this is more than a one-time story, many charities can't do that. And so the future of rating charities for us will also include, show us the results. Just because you have low overhead and you have low salaries does not necessarily mean you're doing a good job. It's the results of the work that at the end of the day, we think will resolve a lot of these problems. Because if you're really getting good results, I would argue the chances are you're not going to be fussing around with lining the pockets of the leadership. If you're really on mission and really are results-oriented, you're going to be streamlined and efficient and effective, and your leaders are going to have comfortable salaries, but not out the window.
Ken Berger, you're doing a great job. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate the time, and it's my pleasure to be here. And please feel free to contact us anytime if you have questions.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Here's some of the sound that we covered on MichaelSavage.com today. Washington Examiner reporter booted from a Sean Penn event for asking about his rectal cancer comment. They threw him out of the meeting. Well, that's how it works in Soviet-style press conferences, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. They tried to erase the tape that she made, even.
Well, the rabbi tried to erase it, didn't
that's
he?
Right.
The good rabbi?
That's correct. That's absolutely
what
correct.
What Jewish group would have Sean Penn when Sean Penn supports Hugo Chavez, who is a known anti-Semite? What Jewish group in their right mind would have Sean Penn?
Makes no sense at all. It's just self-destructive.
Well, I would go a step further. Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks spoke to World War II vets at the World War II Memorial. That's because they're plugging a new movie they made, a new series. So they have to now use the World War II heroes to plug their new series, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, look, they're very good for business, aren't they? They had a big hit with World War II, Band of Brothers, etc.
Oh, yeah.
So why not use old veterans to sell a new product?
As far as they're concerned, they're just another reliable demographic.
That's why he made Saving Private Ryan and Hanks made Band of Brothers with him. Now, of course, they did the Pacific. The interesting thing is why they keep harking back to World War II and they won't say a word about radical Islam and the present threat to America. Isn't that interesting, Beowulf?
It is interesting. And you know, it's disgusting. Hanks says at one point here that ordinary Americans hate going to war. I wonder what Patton would have to say about that.
Everyone hates going to war.
Yeah.
But mostly we hate going to movies that are anti-war.
That's it.
Hmm. Look, here's another one on the website. I mean, on the sound slog today. Matt Damon, a far-left radical maniac, did a movie called The Green Zone. Why would anyone go to see that?
You got me.
Brooklyn Assemblyman wants to find chefs for cooking with salt. I covered that yesterday. Well, those are some of the sound pieces on michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Florida, my favorite adopted state. Charles, welcome to the Savage Nation. I hope you're listening on WFTL out of Fort Lauderdale. What's on your mind, Charles?
Great show tonight, Mike. What's on my mind is my fiance and I went to San Francisco about a year ago, and real first trip for both of us. And we were really, shocked by all the homeless people that were wandering around.
Yeah, the bums are out of control. And by the way, it's an endemic problem like a virus. If I were the mayor, I could cure the bum problem in 90 days. There are laws on the books, or could be put on the books, to end loitering. You remember when you were young, there were laws called loitering, you can't loiter? Right? How did those laws get thrown out? Who threw them out? What, because a few freaks in the ACLU said that they're unconstitutional? Let me ask you, what's more unconstitutional, to take away all civility in a city? To have people puking in the gutter? To have bums harassing young women in the streets? That's in the Constitution? Show me where in the Constitution it says that a bum is allowed to pee on your shoes and insult your wife while you go to a restaurant in San Francisco.
And it's their arrogance as well. I mean, if you flip one $20 or $10, there's not even a thank you.
$10? I wouldn't give them 10 cents. Do you know how much this city spends on so-called homeless bums? The last I checked, and it was 4 years ago, they were spending $280 million a year in direct services to these drug addicts and alcoholics. $280 million in direct services. And what happened? What happened was is the sugar brought more ants to town.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
We had a great
time. That's the problem today is liberalism is a mental disorder. It's also bad for children and other living things. Thanks for the call. That's one topic. There's another topic. Do you know how hard it is to create a product, to sell a product, to make the product, to market the product, to service the product? You know how hard that is? You don't know how hard it is until you've actually done it. It's easy to sit on the sidelines and put down people who make things. You go try and do it. You go try to come up with something that people want. You know, the old American phrase, build a better mousetrap and people will be the path to your door. It's 100% true. It is 100% true. Whether it's one of my advertisers who built a business on the back of a truck, a man who started with a pickup truck and has one of the best companies in America built on the back of intelligence and hard labor, or Craig Smith with the Swiss America. I can name one after the other. These people all built it on their own. They know what it's like to have to keep a business going. Those of you who listen to this show are probably somehow in business one way or the other, or you're in professions where you have to maintain your professional standing or your client base, or you become poor or you go out of business altogether. And let me tell you something else. Talk radio is a business. I have to sell you every day or you're not coming into this tent. You're not going to pay the admission. If I stop giving you what you come into this tent for, you got 75 other choices on a radio in your city. You've got unlimited choices on the internet, magazines, newspapers, you name it. It's a miracle that you listen to me. I know it's a miracle. When I started in 94, there was no internet. I used to have to go to the store and buy newspapers and magazines to do a show. Oh, they had a thing called wires. But what I'm saying is you can access news anywhere you want. You don't need me for the news. All right, play music for me now. Ready? I'm hitting a point. I made my point. You can play any rock and roll for me. Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Little darling, oh, little darling, well, how are you, my lover? I was wrong to try.
No one uses, certain words nobody uses anymore, like haberdashery. We're not even going, it sounds like it's something to do with plants. Haberdashery. Let's think of some other antiquated phrases that are no longer used at all, you know, like big words. I like big words, you know. There are uses for big words if they actually apply. Even if you're a man of the people, you should use them when they're the best word. You don't have to use four words for one if the one word is better than the four, said the fool. So let's have some rock and roll while we're playing. So let's have some more rock and roll.
Please hold my hand.
My head did rock. My head was wrong. To try to love a fool. That my head lover was just for you.
The doctor is in and the diagnosis is clear. Liberalism is a mental disorder.
Savage.